Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Sod 1 of For the Record program number 498, titled 9/11 Update, the SECO File. This is being recorded on February 6th of the year 2005. What we're going to be doing in this broadcast, obviously, is updating the various aspects, or some various aspects, of the investigation into September 11th. Specifically, we're going to be taking a look at SECO, the Saudi Investment Company. That's not going to be the sole focal point of the broadcast, but it will be the primary focal point of the broadcast. And that's appropriate because the more I evaluate the various aspects of the September 11th event and related topics, SECO seems to loom very large. SECO is the European-based holding company for the very powerful, wealthy Bin Laden family's primarily European business dealings. Although Yaslam Bin Laden, Osama's half-brother who runs SECO, has claimed, apparently disingenuously, that he has had no contact whatsoever with his half-brother, in fact, it appears that SECO, according to a number of sources, is not only deeply involved with the milieu of Al-Qaeda, but as we're going to see in this program, SECO appears to be something of a connecting point, something of a pivot point, something of a nexus that joins a number of the different evidentiary tributaries that run through September 11th. September 11th is one of the most complicated events in recent history. It is not at all difficult to understand why it has been misunderstood. It's extremely complicated, and indeed, I think the old parable about the three blind men and an elephant, where one has the trunk, one has the tail, and one has the leg, and they all have a very different impression of what the beast is all about. Each only has a part of the whole, and I think that much of the research that has been done on September 11th basically consists of people who have one part of the whole, but only a small part of it. It's very, very complex. And in this broadcast, we're going to be talking about a number of the different aspects of September 11th. We're going to be taking a look at SECO and how SECO relates to some of the drug smuggling covert operations of the 1980s and 1990s. Specifically, some of those connected with the Iran-Contra affair. We're going to take a look at some of the tributaries running in the direction of Rudy Deckers and the German milieu of Mohammed Atta in Florida. We have a new article from the heroic Daniel Hopsicker, who is very courageously and effectively investigating those Florida connections. We're going to be taking a look, too, at how SECO relates to the Islamic fundamentalist movement and links between SECO and some of the Third Reich alumni who figure in the Bank al-Taqwa milieu. Because indeed, when one begins looking at SECO, you run in the direction of covert operations of the 1980s, you run in the direction of Islamic fundamentalists, and you run in the direction of Nazis, both the old guard from the Third Reich and some of the so-called neo-Nazis that figure also in September 11th. The neo-Nazi links to September 11th is something that have not been explored very effectively. I don't personally like the term neo-Nazi. I think it's sort of demeaning. They're Nazis. They're not neo-Nazis. But one effectively has to talk about that in order to distinguish between the old guard and the newer generation. Because when one looks at September 11th, one finds both. We're going to begin by reviewing some information and taking a look at some new information about Michael Chertoff. Michael Chertoff was the Assistant Attorney General who had effective day-to-day oversight of the September 11th investigation. One should perhaps put the term investigation in quotes. We're going to review Michael Chertoff's relationship with Dr. Magdi El-Amir, who appears to have been an associate of Osama bin Laden. He appears to have gotten money from and channeled money to Osama bin Laden. That's disturbing enough when one considers that there was a professional relationship between this fellow and the guy overseeing the September 11th investigation. It's even more disturbing when one contemplates the fact that it was none other than Michael Chertoff who was in charge of Operation Green Quest, the attempt at interdicting the terrorist money flow. And I believe that Operation Green Quest is the single most important and, unfortunately, in terms of research, badly neglected aspect of September 11th. Woodward and Bernstein were told to follow the money by Deep Throat, and that's what the September 11th investigating community has failed to do. And unfortunately, that community is dominated by elements that are basically connected to the people that did it. And that's why you have so much BS. You know, the cruise missile hit the Pentagon, controlled demolition of the Twin Towers or World Trade Center 7. At least some of that results from confusion. There may have been an explosion of some kind in one of those buildings by a bomb that was placed. But there, at some point, maybe we'll go into why it is impossible for there to have been a controlled demolition. That is a very, very, very involved process and could not possibly have taken place at WT7 or any place else. But in any event, leaving aside the September 11th BS movement, and Daniel Hopsicker, among others, has uncovered very strong relationships between some of the elements that appear to have been involved in perpetrating September 11th and those that are allegedly investigating it. However, what we're going to look at here is an article from the University Star. That's a publication associated with the University of Texas. I believe it's U of T's main publication. This article was authored by Melissa Johnson and Sander Hicks. Sander Hicks is probably best known for running Soft Skull Press. It puts out a lot of paperbacks. This is about Michael Chertoff. It's about Michael Chertoff's relationship with Dr. Magdi El-Amir. And it's about Michael Chertoff's stewardship of Operation Green Quest. And it is not surprising in light of the fact that it was Chertoff who was in charge of Operation Green Quest, that to a certain extent Operation Green Quest got deep-sixed even before the FBI took it over. And as we're going to see, some of the heroic investigators who led to the uncovering of the SAR network, which was the main element in Operation Green Quest, that led to the Bank Al-Taqwa in one direction, and it led to the Bush administration in another. That got covered up, and indeed it was the people that busted the SAR network that were getting investigated by the FBI and the CIA, whereas it should have been. They should have been working with them to help investigate the targets of the Operation Green Quest, way to 320-2002. More about that in a minute. University Star from January 20th, 2005, Melissa Johnson, Sander Hicks, writing about Michael Chertoff, title, Security Risk. Federal Appeals Court Judge Michael Chertoff's ties to the financiers of the September 11th attack may prevent his confirmation as Homeland Security Chief. According to a June 20th, 2000 article in the Record of Bergen County, New Jersey, Chertoff defended accused terrorist financier Dr. Magdi El-Amir. El-Amir's HMO was sued by the state of New Jersey to recoup $16.7 million in losses. At least $5.7 million went, quote, to unknown parties by means of wire transfers to bank accounts where the beneficial owner of the account is unknown, unquote, according to the article. Foreign intelligence reports given to then-chairman of the House International Relations Committee, Ben Gilman, Republican of New York, in 1998, accused Magdi El-Amir of having, quote, had financial ties with Osama bin Laden for years, unquote, according to an August 2nd, 2002 Dateline NBC broadcast. In 1999, Magdi El-Amir and brother Mohammed were named suspects in Operation Diamondback, an FBI-ATF undercover infiltration of Pakistani arms merchants who sought to arm Osama bin Laden with conventional and nuclear weapons, according to independent researcher and former New Jersey police officer Alan Duncan and taped transcripts with FBI informant Randy Glass. Mohammed El-Amir tried to purchase, quote, small arms and ammunition, unquote, in a recorded telephone conversation with Glass, according to Dateline. That's NBC's Dateline, by the way. Dateline confirmed that El-Amir and his corporations had paid at least $5,000 to Egyptian arms dealer Dia Moshen, whom El-Amir referred to on camera as a family friend. Moshen was sentenced to 30 months for his involvement in Operation Diamondback. However, El-Amir was never convicted. Duncan, who was hired by family members of the September 11th victims to research government ties to the attack, said the reason Magdi El-Amir was never convicted was because he was never charged with a crime. Quote, by the time Operation Diamondback culminated in arrests in the summer of 2001, Michael Chertoff was the Assistant Attorney General in charge of the Criminal Division, and Operation Diamondback would have fallen under his purview since it was a criminal case and not a counterterrorism case, Duncan said. From 1990 to 1994, Chertoff was U.S. Attorney for the District of New Jersey during the period when the first attack on the World Trade Center took place. Omar Abdulrahman preached at the Al-Salam Mosque and was later arrested for his role in the 1993 World Trade Center bombing, according to Dateline. Magdi El-Amir was one of the Al-Salam Mosque's financial supporters. Quote, the Jersey City area, and particularly the Al-Salam Mosque, were allowed to continue to be one of the major hubs of terrorist activity in the United States, unquote, Duncan said. In October 2001, Chertoff was appointed head of Operation Green Quest, a multi-agency initiative to target sources of funding for terrorist organizations, according to a U.S. Customs Service press release. Chertoff told the Associated Press on October 25, 2001, that, quote, "The lifeblood of terrorism is money, and if we cut off the money, we cut the blood supply," unquote. Chertoff served in the capacity of Assistant Attorney General of the Criminal Division at the Department of Justice from 2001 to 2003. And I would add parenthetically, as we saw in For the Record Program 495, he was basically in charge of the day-to-day operations of the, quote, investigation, unquote, into September 11th. Note what was mentioned in that article, he was in charge of Operation Green Quest. It was the March 20th, 2002 Operation Green Quest raids, initiated because of the heroic efforts of John Loftus and also because of the heroic investigations of Ms. Rita Katz, a hero, a true hero of September 11th and somebody we'd hear almost nothing about. It was because of that that the SAR network was busted. When one examines the SAR network, one comes across the apparent funding conduits for September 11th, major evidentiary tributaries running in one direction to the Bank al-Taqwa and the Muslim Brotherhood, Third Reich alumni and also so-called neo-Nazis being coordinated by the very important and mysterious Ahmed Huber. And when one examines the SAR network and when one goes in another direction, one comes across the Muslim Brotherhood, people like Abdurrahman Alamoudi, a branch of the de facto branch of the GOP called the Islamic Institute, that headed up by Grover Norquist and also featuring Talat Altman, business associate and political ally of the Bush family. There is no one more centrally involved in the machinations of the Republican right wing, a redundant phrase, but then Grover Norquist. And one of the really, truly stunning aspects of the September 11th investigation is the absolute lack of discussion of the relationship between Bank al-Taqwa, the funders of al-Qaeda and Hamas, the Muslim Brotherhood, and the GOP, and the way in which Talat Altman, Bush associate, family, and business partner, interceded on April 4th, 2002 with on behalf of the institutions and individuals who were popped on March 20th, 2002 for allegedly funding al-Qaeda and Hamas. A stunning, stunning omission when one considers the direct relationship between the funding conduits for the Muslim Brotherhood, Hamas, and al-Qaeda, and the GOP. I think that relationship is more complex than simply one of steward and master. But nonetheless, it is an amazing connection, one that is reflected, to a certain extent at least, in the relationship between Michael Chertoff and Dr. Magdi El Amir. But are people talking about that? No. Not even the September 11th conspiracy crowd is talking about that. Nobody's talking about Grover Norquist and the Islamic Institute, which is a damn bloody shame. Now, referring to the March 20th, 2002 Operation Green Quest raids, as we looked at in For the Records 462, 464, and to a certain extent in 467, Operation Green Quest has been deep-sixed, specifically when the Customs Department was moved to the Department of Homeland Security. The Department of Justice refused to share information with them. One of the focal points in that regard is Robert Mueller, head of the FBI, formerly a person who had run a badly attenuated investigation of BCCI and apparently deliberately obscured some of the intelligence links to BCCI, links that would have run in the direction of the Iran-Contra scandal, the Iraqgate scandal, the arming of the Afghan Mujahideen, George W. Bush's business connections, and ultimately in the direction of Osama bin Laden, the Muslim Brotherhood, al-Qaeda, and what was to coalesce years later as the milieu of September 11th. I made an allusion to Rita Katz, an heroic woman who basically she was an Iraqi-born Jewish woman. She then emigrated to Israel and after that to the United States because she spoke fluent Arabic and was familiar with that culture. She, on her own initiative, went underground to investigate some of the jihadist elements that were operating in the United States. And as such, she infiltrated the milieu of the SAR network that got popped on March 20th, 2002. And indeed, it was her heroic work as an individual and John Loftus's heroic work as an individual that led to the March 20th, 2002 Operation Green Quest raids. bearing in mind the fact that it was Michael Chertoff himself, deeply sullied by connections to an alleged Al-Qaeda financier, who was in charge of the Operation Green Quest raids. And what we're going to do now is to review some information that we've looked at in For the Record 425 and 456, among other shows, after the March 20th, 2002 Green Quest raids. After Talat Atman of Grover Norquist's Islamic Institute interceded on behalf of those institutions and individuals accused of funding Al-Qaeda, he did so with then-Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill on April 4th of 2002. Paul O'Neill was fired later that year. Look what happened to the investigators who had basically busted the SAR network. Who did the FBI and the CIA begin surveilling and harassing? The targets of Operation Green Quest and the SAR network raids of 3/20/2002? No. They began investigating and harassing the people who had led the investigation. Rita Katz wrote a story of her adventures in a book called Terrorist Hunter. It was authored by Anonymous. That was the name Rita Katz was using at that time. She has since come forward. She was afraid of retribution against her family, certainly a realistic consideration. She has now gone public, however, but she published her book under the title of Anonymous. It was published in hardcover by HarperCollins in 2003. The full information, including ISBN number, will be in the description for this show. After the 3/20/2002 Green Quest rage, which busted the SAR network, a nexus that links the GOP and prime GOP operative Grover Norquist with the Muslim Brotherhood, Al-Qaeda, the Bank Al-Taqwa, the Underground Reich, Old Guard Nazis, and New Generation Nazis, after those raids, the CIA and the FBI began investigating the investigators. And bear in mind that in charge of Operation Green Quest was Michael Chertoff, the new nominee to head up the Department of Homeland Security. Reading now from Terrorist Hunter, yet the FBI wasn't the worst part in this sticky affair. The CIA was. The CIA was investigating me and the SAR investigators from Green Quest and Customs. The CIA and the FBI investigated everyone who had anything to do with the SAR investigations. White vans and SUVs with dark windows appeared near all the homes of the SAR investigators. All agents, some of whom were very experienced with surveillance, knew they were being followed. So was I. I felt that I was being followed everywhere and watched, at home, in the supermarket, on the way to work. And for what? While undercover, I needed to watch out during the conference, the prayer, the rally, but I could relax as soon as I was out of there. Now, I was being watched 24/7. It's a terrible sensation to know that you have no privacy and no security. That strange clicking of the phones that wasn't there before, the oh-so-crudely opened mail at home and in the office, and the same man I spied in my neighborhood supermarket who was also on the train I took to Washington a week ago. Life can be miserable when you know that someone's always breathing down your neck. The customs agents were questioned. So were their supervisors. So was the U.S. attorney on the SAR case. One of the questions they were all asked was whether they'd leaked material to me. They all kept saying that this was the most preposterous idea. They all said that before I came, none of them had the slightest clue about SAR and 555 Grove Street. They said that there was nothing of value they could give me that I didn't have already. That it was I who gave them the material, not the other way around. None of the investigated parties had the slightest clue as to the real reason they were being investigated. Risking criticism for being unfoundedly paranoid, I must convey my theory about the investigation and the CIA's involvement in it. I don't know for certain what's the deal with the CIA investigating the SAR investigators, but it sure feels as if someone up in that agency doesn't like the idea that the Saudi Arabian boat is rocked. The raids on 555 had taken place already. The CIA couldn't change that. But investigating and giving the people behind the raids a hard time is a most efficient way of making sure the SAR investigation stops there. Which, come to think of it, may be the reason the government looks so unfavorably on the lawsuit filed by 9/11 victims' families against several Saudi entities and individuals accusing them of funding terrorism and seeking damages. Indeed. And, of course, it was the heroic John Loftus who was behind those the filing of those lawsuits, as well as the legal enactment of what led to the Green Quest raids of 3/20/2002. So, again, Michael Chertoff was in charge of Operation Green Quest. That may be one reason why the Justice Department helped to deep six that investigation. The most important aspect of September 11th, and sadly, languishing with a dearth of attention from those official and otherwise. Before we turn to CICO, a very, very important update on the Rudy Decker's connection from Daniel Hopsicker. I visited with the heroic Daniel Hopsicker on a number of different programs, including For the Record shows 482, 483, and 484, in which I interviewed him about his very important book called Welcome to Terrorland, Mohammed Atta and the 9/11 Cover-Up in Florida. Dutch national Rudy Dekkers and the German network with which he was working and in which Mohammed Atta was secreted, although secreted is perhaps a bad word, that network is apparently still operating through the Bahamas and into Florida. Rudy Dekkers is still coming into the United States. And here is an update from Daniel Hopsicker. This from the Mad Cow Morning News website, www.madcowprod.com. This is an article by Daniel Hopsicker dated January 31st, 2005, headline, Dekkers, quote, regularly, unquote, slips into U.S. illegally from the Bahamas. It reads in part, Rudy Dekkers has been regularly entering the U.S. illegally through the Bahamas, the Mad Cow Morning News has learned. In an effort to evade U.S. customs scrutiny, the infamous Dutch national running the Venice, Florida flight school, which both terrorist pilots who crashed into the World Trade Center used as cover, is slipping into the U.S. from the Bahamas after exchanging clothes with one of the pilots on the charter flight which flew to pick him up. Then, wearing the charter pilot's uniform, multiple sources confirm Dekkers walks through U.S. customs, quote, Rudy looked like the co-pilot when they landed in the U.S., said one source. His bags were carried through customs by a female who appeared to be the co-pilot, Christina Hewitt, who flew in with pilot Marcus Huber to pick him up, and who then posed as the customer for the charter flight when they went through customs, unquote. Huber, H-U-B-E-R, is a Swiss national. Hewitt is reportedly from Louisiana and found employment at the Naples airport with Dekkers several years ago, quote, cleaning out the planes, which is quite obviously a job you wouldn't want just anyone doing, unquote. Parenthetically, this operation involved apparently massive drug smuggling, and as we're going to see when we get to the subject of CICO, drug smuggling connected covert operations from the 80s and 90s were one of the things that was in that CICO was involved with, and we're going to take a look at François Genoux associate Baudin Dunal's involvement with that. Note also the fact that the pilot's name here is Marcus Huber, and he's a Swiss national. The thought suggests itself about the concern of the possibility that Marcus Huber might be have some blood relation with Ahmed Huber, one of the principals of Bank Al-Taqwa, also a Swiss national involved with the milieu of 9/11. But, of course, that may only be coincidental. Huber is not an uncommon name in Switzerland. So that is something to be investigated. If there's anybody who can confirm whether Ahmed Huber has a son or relative named Marcus Huber, that would be most welcome. More about Rudy Dekkers and his periodic reentry into the United States. Despite his reputation as an international operator, Dekkers was anything but a cool customer. Quote, he had beads of sweat popping out on his forehead, a pilot who picked him up in Nassau laughingly related to a friend. He looked so guilty that we were all afraid we were going to get caught. Dekkers' efforts to elude inspection may be partly the result of his notoriety after the 9/11 attack. Officials looked on uneasily while his international jaunts continued without let-up to destinations which include at least several recent trips to that narco-trafficker's destination of choice, Colombia. At least several of the charter flights were reportedly operated by Rex Air, located at the Naples airport, and owned by Rex Gosteiger, a German national who purchased a flight school there named Wolf Aero in the late 1990s from Wolfgang Boringer, another German national and a close friend of Mohammed Atta, according to Atta's one-time American girlfriend, Amanda Keller. And again, we've talked more about this network at great, great length in For the Record programs 482, 483, 484. And again, I can't recommend the book Welcome to Terrorland by Daniel Hopsicker strongly enough. It is a very important book. So once again, Rudy Dekkers and his Bahamas-based German network moving apparently into and out of the United States with impunity. One of the things that I would note that in the Nazi tract Serpent's Walk, one of the historical novels, or one of the, quote, novels, unquote, put out by National Vanguard Books, the publisher of the publishing arm of the National Alliance. Those books are put out as basically teaching tools. They're rather like Mein Kampf, although officially novels. In fact, they are political manifestos. In Serpent's Walk, it's about a Nazi takeover of the United States in the mid-21st century by the descendants of the Third Reich, who go underground, buy into the American opinion-forming media, and following a series of devastating terrorist attacks involving weapons of mass destruction, martial law is declared, and they take over the United States. In the book Serpent's Walk, the genetically engineered microorganisms which are used in the weapons of mass destruction attacks are secreted into the United States through drug smuggling networks. And again, I think the Decker's milieu in Florida, their connection to drug trafficking and Iran-Contra-related operations, and their relationship with the German/Mohammed Atta links, well, that is a very, very important connection to consider at great length. Now, introducing the topic that we will be focusing on for the duration of the broadcast, namely SECO. Once more, from the book Welcome to Terrorland, of SECO's aviation subsidiaries training of pilots at the Huffman Aviation School owned by Rudy Deckers, the fellow we just spoke about. Swiss police questioned Yaslam bin Laden because one of his companies, Avcon Air Charter, had offered flight training to clients at the Venice flight school attended by some of the hijackers. As a result of what Le Monde called a still unexplained coincidence, unquote, the pilots of Yaslam bin Laden's company trained at Huffman Aviation in Florida, the paper stated, quote, "I didn't choose that flight school," Yaslam protested. "I don't have contact with my half-brother since over 20 years ago," unquote. Swiss magazine L'Hebdo reported the Swiss federal inspectors were seeking information on the activities of several bin Laden family companies, including Geneva-based Saudi investment company, a financial clearinghouse for the family's international investments, and Avcon Business Jets SA, which owned a fleet of private jets, which it leased to clients. For the record, 495, we took a look at a renewed and expanded investigation of Yaslam bin Laden, who, according to investigator Charles Brizard, has had a joint bank account with Osama bin Laden for many, many years. As we're going to see, not only does it appear to be disingenuous when people associated with SECO claim they had no contact with Osama, but indeed, I think in many ways, SECO is a pivot point. But we're going to talk about that inside, too. Websites. Sister station WFMU, two websites featuring the whole For the Record series on Real Audio. More recent shows streaming at www.wfmu.org/Dave Emery. Older programs for download only at a longer URL. Link to both that address and to the For the Record section of the Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com. Spitfire website features detailed annotated article-length descriptions of the For the Record shows, usually up within a week or two of the airing of the show. Features a number of other things as well, descriptions of all of the shows and lectures I've done over the years, the pivotally important and suppressed book Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile by Paul Manning, now available in both PDF and in HTML, both for free. A website maintained by listeners in the Midwest that features the declassified U.S. government documents about the Bush family's involvement with Nazi industry before, during, and most importantly, after World War II, and all sorts of other features as well. There's a search engine on the Spitfire website, and also a page to click on to support the work that I'm doing, because unfortunately, I'm not like the people in the SAR network. I don't have all kinds of bucks at my disposal, but I make a really, really good go of it with a little bit that I have. There is a page to click on for those of you who would like to support the work that I'm doing. We're going to continue with our discussion of SECO in Side 2 of this program. However, this wraps up Side 1 of For the Record program number 498, Update on 9/11, the SECO Connection. This has been recorded on February 6th of 2005. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening. Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is Side 2 of For the Record program number 498, titled Update on September 11th, The SECO Connection. This has been recorded on February 6th of 2005. Now, in this second half of the program, we're going to be focusing exclusively on SECO. SECO is the Saudi investment company. It is the European holding company for the various businesses, particularly European-based businesses, of the very powerful and wealthy Saudi bin Laden family. As we're going to see, the SECO firm has many offshore branches in tax havens. We're going to review some of the involvement of people involved with SECO in some of the covert operations of the 1980s, specifically some of the drug smuggling Iran-Contra connected operations, such as the Shikarchi AG case. And indeed, the more one studies September 11th, if one does so in an objective fashion, the more one begins to move in the direction of SECO. Because indeed, I think SECO is something of a pivot point. I think it is something of a connecting nexus, to coin a term. It is one of the things that links some of the many different aspects of September 11th with one another. As we looked at in the conclusion of Side 1, it was SECO's aviation subsidiary, Avcon, that was sending pilots for training to little old Huffman Aviation in Naples, Florida, or Venice, Florida. Huffman Aviation was one of the two flight schools that some of the September 11th hijackers used as a cover. As we looked at in our discussions with Daniel Hopsicker about his landmark text, Welcome to Terrorland, Mohammed Atta and the 9/11 Cover-Up in Florida, the Huffman Aviation and the related school run by Arnie Krutoff, the two Dutch boys, was deeply involved with, obviously, covert operations, organized crime, drug smuggling covert operations of the Iran-Contra affair and related activities went through that area. Many of the people involved with the milieu of Rudy Deckers and Arnie Krutoff were involved with some of the Iran-Contra drug smuggling related activities. And again, it was SECO that was sending pilots for training to, of all places, little old Huffman Aviation in Florida. As we looked at in our many discussions with Daniel Hopsicker and in other programs, it was in Florida that Mohammed Atta was associated not only with Huffman Aviation, but the milieu that he was involved with down there, the group that he was involved with, the social environment and professional environment was German to a large extent. And indeed, a number of Mohammed Atta's associates in Florida were the sons and daughters of prominent German industrialists. That alone should indicate to us that there's a lot more going on here than just Islamic fundamentalism. There certainly is Islamic fundamentalism going on, but when one begins to examine SECO, a number of the different aspects of September 11th begin to dovetail with one another. It is through SECO that some of the Iran-Contra drug smuggling-related covert operations begin to come together with some of the old Nazi and neo-Nazi connections, some of the links running in the direction of the Muslim Brotherhood, and we're going to take a look at some of those right now. In RFA program number 38, we took a look at, among other things, the Shikarchi AG case. That was an Iran-Contra drug smuggling-connected case involving the running of heroin, among other things, through Europe and into the United States. Among the names that cropped up in connection with that were Manzer El-Kassar, a fellow who was identified in Europe as Avni Yasser Musululu, which the European press revealed to be an alias for Eral Çelik, one of the Turkish fascist Grey Wolves involved with Mehmet Ali Aja in the shooting of the Pope. And indeed, the Grey Wolves, the youth branch of the National Action Party, have a number of interesting connections running back to the World War II period. They were involved in a number of interesting activities, and again, one of their number shot the Pope in May of 1981. The Shikarchi AG case was a very interesting one as well. It sullied the reputation and, to a certain extent, was involved with the resignation of a woman named Magdalena Kopp. Magdalena Kopp was the Swiss Minister of Justice, basically the equivalent of our Attorney General. One of her successors was Carla Del Ponte. She, in turn, is a law partner with Pier Felici Barchi, a Swiss-based attorney who is also deeply involved with the Banco del Gottardo and an Altaqua-related milieu. once again goes back to Al-Qaeda. Pierfelice Barchi is the attorney for former Third Reich intelligence agent and Bank al-Taqwa head Youssef Nada. And again, when one begins examining the milieu of Al-Qaeda and the various evidentiary tributaries branching off in various directions, one very, very quickly comes across the obvious realization that there's a whole lot more going on here than just Islamic fundamentalism. Pierfelice Barchi was, among other things, the attorney handling the Swiss investments of a one-time obscure Italian construction magnate named Silvio Berlusconi. Berlusconi was a member of the fascist P2 Lodge in Italy. Now, of course, he is Prime Minister of Italy and heads up a coalition that involves the Alleanza Nazionale, the National Alliance, the successor to Mussolini's fascist party. And there are a number of other links running in the direction of Italian fascism as well. But again, Mohammed Shekarchi, for whom Shekarchi AG is named, is a member of the board of directors of SECO, the Saudi investment company whose aviation subsidiary trains pilots down at little old Huffman Aviation. That's the school that Mohammed Atta and company were using as a cover and through which they used to infiltrate the United States. What we're going to take a look at now is some of the SECO offshore operations, because indeed one of the most prominent people in SECO, a member of the board of directors of SECO, a one-time co-chairman of the board of directors of SECO, is a Swiss-based attorney named Baudin Dunant. That's a name familiar to longtime listeners. Baudin Dunant is not only a member of the board of directors of SECO, but he helped to set up a number of offshore companies, some of which were implicated in some of the Iran-Contra and covert operations-related drug smuggling of the 1980s. Baudin Dunant, as we will review later in the program, was also a close friend of, protege of, and attorney for François Genoux, one of the most prominent Third Reich intelligence operatives before, during, and after the war, a man who helped in the post-war diaspora of SS war criminals, a man who helped in the post-war distribution of Nazi monies, thereby inevitably linking him with the post-war Nazi Flight Capital Organization. And Baudin Dunant, again, was an attorney for François Genoux, one of the most important Third Reich operatives, a name not very well known but pivotal, and it appears that Youssef Nada and Ahmed Huber were functioning as cutouts for François Genoux when they set up the Bank al-Taqwa. Youssef Nada himself, a Third Reich intelligence veteran, and we should note that all of the monies that al-Qaeda had that were still traceable after September 11th were in the Bank al-Taqwa. That Bank al-Taqwa has very strong, a number of evidentiary tributaries running in the direction of the SAR network that got busted on March 20th as part of the Operation Green Quest raids. We looked at that inside one. That was the group that got popped as a result of the efforts of Rita Katz and John Loftus. Shortly after that, instead of investigating the targets, the FBI and CIA began investigating the investigators. Who knows what role Michael Chertoff, heading up Operation Green Quest, had in that. Now, about SECO, its offshore subsidiaries, its apparently ongoing relationship with Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda, and its connections to some of the covert operations of the 1980s, we're going to read a section of a remarkable book called Dollars for Terror, authored by Richard LaBeviere. This book was published by Algora in softcover in the United States, copyright 2000. It came out in 1999 in French. And this book is one of the best books written about September 11th, and it was written well before September 11th, but nobody can understand September. Nobody who's serious about researching September 11th can do so effectively without having read this pivotal book. Not that it's a book without flaw, but it is vitally important, and it to a remarkable extent anticipates the aspects of September 11th, the various things that need to be investigated, and it did so well before September 11th. Of SECO, François Genoux associate Baudin Dunant and SECO's many offshore subsidiaries that were used for various clandestine activities, we read as follows in Dollars for Terror. Very little information is publicly available on the activities of the bin Laden organization, except for a luxurious brochure that gives a general presentation of its various services, The group does not publish an annual report. A Lebanese banker, very anxious to preserve his anonymity, indicated to us that the group has a large subsidiary company, Saudi Investment Company, or SICO, whose head office is in Geneva, but which has branches in other European countries, the United States, the Arab countries, and in several tax havens, including the Bahamas. Created in May of 1980 in Switzerland, SICO, whose stated activities are, quote, wealth management and investment services, unquote, is directed by Islam bin Laden, brother of Bakir bin Laden, the patriarch of the family. Its board of directors includes, in particular, a Swiss business lawyer, Baudin Dunant, Esquire, who also worked for the big Lebanese group William Kazan. A memo from a European intelligence agency specifies that since 1984, this lawyer has created for SICO numerous offshore companies in tax havens. Frank Warren also sits on the board. He is president of an American sporting goods company and a shipping company, Proteus, along with a Swede, Kjell Carlson, and two Swiss, Bruno Weiss and Beatrice Dufour, ex-sister-in-law of Islam bin Laden, who divorced Carmen Dufour in May 1997. Two other branches of the bin Laden empire developed as holding companies. The first, Falcon Limited, is based in the Cayman Islands, and the second, also baptized SICO, is registered in Curaçao. Falcon Limited controls SICO London, which was founded in 1984 and is directed by Beatrice Dufour, and SICO Great Britain, created in 1985 under the direction of Baudin Dunant, Esquire. SICO Curaçao, whose director is Islam bin Laden, is a player on the real estate market worldwide. The board also comprises Saleh bin Laden, Beatrice Dufour, and an American real estate developer, Charles Tickle. The bin Laden empire invested in a private airline that offered services between Great Britain, Switzerland, and Saudi Arabia. It employed 175 pilots and had about 50 pieces of equipment between 1995 and 1997. At that time, its two principal shareholders were a Swiss businessman and Islam bin Laden, the president of SICO. Recall, it's that aviation subsidiary that was training its pilots at the Rudy Decker's flight school down in Naples, Florida, or at Venice, Florida. Continuing, while there's nothing criminal in such an organizational chart in itself, this is still an exemplary outline of the complexity of the ensemble of shell companies that can be used to disguise what the experts call the, quote, legal financing, unquote, of terrorism, a sort of reverse laundering that takes full advantage of all the banking industry's secrecy. Here, clean money becomes criminal as it flows through legal companies and investments, unquote, leaving no hint to suggest that it might later be diverted. It's hard, then, to identify the chinks whereby this money might nevertheless leak out to become criminal. For example, the Thai intelligence agency affirms that bin Laden's brother-in-law, Mohammed Jamal Khalife, regional manager of the International Islamic Relief Organization, is used as a screen for the financing of several Philippine Islamist organizations. Activists from these groups show up in the training camps in Pakistan and in Afghanistan, and at the Islamic International University of Islamabad, which is known to be used as a cover for students eager to acquire a paramilitary education. The zones of porosity are hard to identify precisely. Without leaving a paper trail, the funds are transferred directly into liquidities, and the actors are seldom caught with their hands in the bag. That's the trouble with money, explains George Cardouche, the president of the Association of Arab Bankers in London, again quoting, "If an honorable company decides to invest in another company, which gives funds to such humanitarian organizations or charitable association which itself may transfer the funds to extremist groups, there's nothing you can do about it. Money is like water. It seeks level ground, therefore it runs wherever it can," unquote. The same viewpoint can be heard in the Geneva Business District, where the bin Laden organization enjoys a solid banking reputation, just like SICO, an honorable and above-board organization installed in a patrician house in the center of the city of Calvin. While he does not spend most of his time among the financiers and business lawyers of Geneva, its boss, Islam bin Laden, fuels conversations not only because he continues to maintain contact with his famous brother, but especially because of the war that raged at the top of the bin Laden empire. Quote, "In concert with Osama," relates a businessman who hails from one of the Gulf states, "Islam bin Laden is suspected by his own family of instigating the death of his elder brother, Saleh Mohammed bin Laden. The latter perished in a mysterious explosion of his private jet during takeoff at the airport of Riyadh in 1988. The cause of the explosion was never explained, and the Saudi police force abruptly marked the case as classified. In Riyadh, it is considered that this attack made it possible for Yaslem to be propelled to the head of SECO at the very moment when it was building offshore companies specialized in the traffic of weapons bound for Afghanistan, unquote. Other sources confirm this account and the frequent meetings between Osama and several of his brothers in Khartoum and Yemen starting in 1990. It is indeed by tracking the parallel traffic in arms and drugs that one inevitably finds traces of the banker of the jihad, unquote. That is a reference here in the context of this book to Osama bin Laden. So note again the role of SECO and its offshore subsidiaries set up by Baudin Dunant, about whom we'll have more to say in a couple of minutes, and the involvement of those subsidiaries in, among other things, some of the drug smuggling-related covert operations of the 1990s, the financing of the Afghan Mujahideen, the arming of Saddam Hussein, and the arming of the Contras, all overlap to a considerable extent. Institutions like BCCI are a common element. And again, recall that in our discussions with Daniel Hopsicker about Mohammed Atta's milieu in Florida, a couple of the elements that loom large are, one, the fact that he was hanging out with Germans in Florida, and also the many evidentiary tributaries running from the Atta milieu and the Rudy Decker's flight training milieu into the direction of some of the Iran-Contra-related drug smuggling. So again, SECO, I believe, is one of the pivot points that enables us to begin connecting the world of covert operations of the 80s and 90s, the Iran-Contra-related drug smuggling activities, the training of pilots at Tiny Huffman Aviation with Rudy Decker's German milieu that was basically shepherding Mohammed Atta. And in turn, when we begin looking at SECO, we find Shikarki AG. We're going to talk about that in a minute. And we begin getting to people like Baudin Dunant, friend of, attorney for, and protege of François Janoux, one of the most important Third Reich operatives. And when we begin looking at Bank Al-Taqwa, we go once again to veterans of the Third Reich, and we begin seeing links running in the direction of Italian fascism and so-called neo-Nazis, unquote, as well as, of course, to the Muslim Brotherhood and Islamic fundamentalists. We're going to explore the world of SECO still further here. We're going to be turning to an essay we've used in the past. This is called Report on Islamists, the Far Right, and Al-Taqwa. It was authored by Kevin Coogan, the author of the pivotally important book Dreamer of the Day, Francis Parker Yaki and the Post-War Fascist International. Now, this paper draws largely on a book which, sadly, as far as I know, has not been translated into English. That book is called Schmutzige Geschäfte und Heiliger Krieg, translates Dirty Business and Holy War, that was co-authored by Hermania and Johannes von Donani. It is about the link between the Al-Qaeda milieu and the jihadist milieu, and some of the so-called dirty business that we're going to be looking at right now. Now, this section of this paper by Kevin Coogan, and by the way, this is available online. Again, Report on Islamists, the Far Right, and Al-Taqwa, published by Kevin Coogan in September of 2002. We're going to take a look at SECO. We're going to take a look at the relationship between SECO and Shikarki AG. Mohammed Shikarki is a member of the board of directors of SECO, and some of the work done by Dave White, our heroic European and pan-European foreign translator, set forth the activities of Shikarki AG, and those linked people like Manzer al-Qassar with some of the Grey Wolves and with some of the drug smuggling connected covert operations of the 80s. Turning now to a section of Kevin's paper from called, again, Report on Islamists, the Far Right, and Al-Taqwa, of SECO, Baudin Dunant, Shikarki, and the covert operations of the 80s, and as we'll see, some links running in the direction of Third Reich veterans and so-called neo-Nazis, we read: The French-Swiss Lucien Roulet, R-O-U-I-L-L-E-R, was until 2001 not only an advisor to the DMI and Quatrain, but he was also an advisor to Faisal Finance SA and the Faisal Islamic Bank. At the same time, Roulet was linked to the Geneva-registered MKS Finance SA, owned by the Shikarki brothers. Parenthetically, that refers to Shikarki AG, Mohammed Shikarki, a member of the board of directors of SECO. Continuing, in the 1980s, Shikarchi Trading sent not just $25 million of CIA money to Afghanistan, but also was involved in drug money for the Turkish mafia. For a time, a member of the family was represented on the advisory board of Russell Wood in London as well. And this complicated and many-branched business was the British branch of the Geneva-registered Saudi Investment Company, or SICO. SICO was founded in May of 1980 as the Swiss Investment Center for the Bin Laden family under the name Signet SA, and later renamed SICO. It belongs to the Swiss-based Yaslam Bin Laden, one of Osama's many half-brothers. Yaslam has been zealous in promoting the idea that the Bin Laden family has nothing to do with Osama. Yet Osama's stepmother in the beginning of 2001 visited Afghanistan for an expensive marriage ceremony of her grandson, which was broadcast over Al Jazeera, and she speaks regularly on the phone to Osama. Another half-brother of Osama's, Sheikh Ahmed, told CNN how much he admires Osama's deep piety as well as his determination to achieve a goal. And more French and American experts are suspecting financial support from his family that has economic consequences. After 9/11, members of the Carlyle Group, which includes George Bush Sr., asked the Bin Laden Group to withdraw its investments. Also, an investment of at least $20 million by the Bin Laden Group in a sister society of the Deutsche Bank in London was suddenly not welcome. The idea that there remained close ties between Bin Laden and his family was mostly put forth about Yaslam Bin Laden, who has spent the past 20 years in Switzerland. It is the Swiss author Richard Labeyrie, in his 1999 book Dollars for Terror, that challenged the official version that there was a clean break between Osama and the rest of the family in 1994. Labeyrie says that SICO has played a key role in money laundering, but Yaslam Bin Laden refuses to respond to the charges, and said that it would be a great mistake to respond as it would only serve as further advertisement for the book. Yet after 9/11, a French report came out with the same information accusing SICO of ties to Bin Laden. It essentially notes that SICO has so many offshore structures that it can elude financial supervision. 5 months after investigators of the French toll unit TACFIN assembled evidence regarding illicit transactions, the director of the investigation, Renaud Van Rumbeek, discussed suspicious transactions between France, England, and the British Virgin Islands. Almost on the exact day of this announcement, 2 months later, the homes and apartments, as well as Yaslam Bin Laden's company, were searched. Yaslam Bin Laden knows his life is now under the microscope. Why did he fly, for example, 9 times to Milan? Each stop was so short, reports a member of the maintenance team at the private Forlanini Airport, that it couldn't be for shopping. 6 times, Bin Laden came to Milan from his domicile in Cannes, and because of EU regulations, these flights were considered domestic, and no list of passengers was required to be filed. But 3 times, he flew in from Zurich, and the Italian border police have copies of the passenger list. Here, there is a puzzle, as one name is Carlos Rocha, but there is no Carlos Rocha known to investigators. However, there is a Charles Rocha who is on the SICO advisory board. Is this a typo, or is there someone else using a false passport? They can't get an answer from Yaslam Bin Laden, who is silent on this matter. It is equally possible that Bin Laden's silence about Rocha is meant to avoid other problems that might arise, such as why Charles Rocha and Baudin Dunant, 2 members of the SICO advisory board who were attorneys, on May 21, 2001, liquidated the business Tyndall Trust, that had first been registered in Villars-sur-Glâne near Fribourg in January of 1986. They fulfilled the same function for a sister society of the Tyndall Trust that shared the same name and that was opened up in 1990 in Geneva and liquidated in January of 2001. One of the top managers of the Tyndall Trust since its founding was the American tax attorney Willard Zucker, who lives in Geneva. Zucker also controls the Lake Geneva-registered Compagnie de Service Fiduciaire, or CSF. And CSF had, along with participation from Tyndall Trust, assumed financial management for a corporate group named Enterprise. Enterprise, however, had nothing to do with a successor company to the 1983-founded successor to the Albert Hakim and U.S. General Richard Secord founded Stanford Technologies Trading Group International, or STTGI, which later changed its name to Enterprise and administered secret and illegal weapons shipments with Iran and the Contras. The same Willard Zucker who was associated with Baudin Dunant and Charles Rochat arranged payments from the Enterprise account for Oliver North. In 1986, the Syrian Manzer al-Qassar was paid from an Enterprise account for a weapons deal with the Contras. But al-Qassar was not only one of the world's greatest weapons dealers, he also had close ties with Islamic fundamentalist and terrorist groups in the Mideast. Al-Qassar also worked with an international group interested in sending toxic and atomic waste materials by ship to Mozambique. As for Zucker, he has constantly denied that any of his activity on behalf of the Enterprise Group from America infringed on Swiss or U.S. law. What's even more surprising than finding out about the links between Rochat and Dunant with a representative of the Iran-Contra affair like Zucker is finding a connection point between Islamic terrorism and the far right. For it turns out that Baudin Dunant was not only the attorney for François Genoux, the old Swiss Nazi who died in 1996, but his close friend. Again, note the movement here. Note the liquidation of many of these firms in early 2001. As we've looked at in numerous broadcasts, including For the Record Program 356, 456, and most recently 495, in the spring of 2001, SECO opened 16 unregistered accounts with the Deutsche Börse-owned Clearstream network. Bank Altaqua also had access to the Clearstream network, and again, one of the pivotal people in this appears to have been Baudin Dunant, a friend and protege of and attorney for François Genoux. And again, in the description for this show, this will be dealt with at greater length. One last paragraph here. Kevin Coogan concludes his paper. My own belief is that it's less the apparently fantastic and James Bond-like quality of this analysis that's most difficult to understand. The real difficulty is the utter ignorance of most Westerners, Americans in particular, about the very existence of such people as François Genoux. Thus, when Ernst Backes, one of Europe's leading experts in money laundering, told the Luxembourg-based economic journal Plus Minus last year that he believed the financial source of funds for the 9/11 terrorists would ultimately be traced back to Swiss bank accounts established by Genoux, few Americans had any idea what Backes could possibly be talking about. For this same reason, there has been virtually no independent investigation into SECO's Baudin Dunant's relationship to Genoux, or for that matter the role that Syrian-born Mohammed Mardam Bey, believed to be related to a former Syrian foreign minister, has played both as a member of Magnan, Dunant and Associates, as well as Bey's possible links with Genoux. And what does it mean when we're told that Youssef Nata, for example, is believed by Egyptian authorities to have worked for German intelligence in World War II? What it means, folks, is that we got a tangled web, and it appears that SECO is near the center of that web, and that's where the spider hides, so to speak. By the way, there will be supplemental information in the printed description for this show, so if some of this seems a little unclear, it'll be set forth at greater length and in greater detail in the description for this show that'll be on the Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com. That website features both real audio and MP3 files of the most recently recorded For the Record segments, links to two websites maintained by sister station WFMU that have all the For the Record shows on real audio. The Spitfire website features thousands of pages of documentation, links to a website with the document, the Bush family's involvement with Nazi industry, features the book Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, in both PDF and HTML, and all kinds of other things as well, so please take advantage of the Spitfire website. There's also a page to click on to support yours truly, but that wraps up For the Record program number 498, Side 2, update on 9/11, the SECO connection. This is being recorded on February 6th of the year 2005. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.
And Dave Emery brought to you every Tuesday at 6 o'clock p.m. here on WFMU. Coming up at 8 o'clock is Tom Sharpling, the best show on WFMU. Coming up now, it's time for Mac and the Antique Phonograph Music Program. This is WFMU East Orange, WXHD Mount Hope, and WFMU.org.
evening, friends, and welcome to another edition of the Antique Phonograph Music Program. Here I am, your host, Mac, once again, with another hour of the phonographs here set up in the studio, and me cranking them up and putting on the discs and cylinders. We started off appropriately with Mr. Radio Man by Ted Lewis and his band on a slightly uncooperatively abrasive Columbia record from 1924, which was sort of making it slow down a bit when I didn't want it to. But that happens with these machines. It's all part of the sound and the experience. Let's do now a set of some bands and orchestras. We're going to start off with an Edison Blue Amber All Cylinder from 1919 by the Jodis Society Orchestra. This is called The Girl Behind the Gun.